Hello everyone, my name is Haolan Xu and I'm coming from Young Institute of Theoretical Physics, Stony Brook. And today I'm going to discuss a little bit about the analyticity properties of two-dimensional eisenfield series. Here's the outline. I will start with some introduction, basic introductions, then talking about analyticities of eisenfield series in different states or different phases, disordered phase and ordered phase. Then I will try to establish the so-called extended analyticity conjecture, which actually connect two phases together. And if time allowed, I will also talk a little bit about scattering matrices of two-dimensional eisenfield series. Okay, let's start from the very basics. The Eisen model is defined by having classical spins up and down, sitting on a lattice, like square lattice, triangle lattice, etc., with the interactions between the nearest side. And here is the Hamiltonian. The first term is the nearest side interaction, and second term represents the external magnetic field. And the partition function, the lattice partition function, is defined by summing up all spin configurations with respect to the Boltzmann probabilities. And why is Eisen model special? Because it describes the most important universality classes in nature, including vapor liquid phase transition, ferromagnetic transition, near Curie point, etc. And currently, people have different understanding with respect to Eisen models in different dimensions. For example, in 4 minus epsilon dimension, people have the famous languages of Wilsonian renormalizing group. In 3 dimensions, many numerical solutions near criticality are available, from the most ancient one, perturbative renormalization group flow, Monte Carlo simulation, and for recent years, people have developed the numerical conformal bootstrap method in 3 dimensions. The story about 2 dimensions are even more ancient. 70 years ago, Ansah gave the solution of the 2-dimensional Eisen model with no external magnetic fields. And then 60 years ago, famous Yang and Li established the theorem about the Young-Li circle and the zeros of the partition functions. However, for generic coupling J and generic external magnetic field H, 2-dimensional Eisen model are still have no generic solutions in closed form. Also, when you're not sitting exactly at the critical points, the conformal symmetry or other integrability would be broken when you're not sitting exactly at the critical point. So, how much can we still understand two-dimensional Eisen model is still a very interesting question. Now, let's take a step back and try to look at it from another point of view, from the field theory point of view. In the continuous limit, Eisen models at the critical point would become described by the Eisen conformal field series. And for those Eisen models not sitting at the critical point, they would become the so-called Eisen field series, which is defined as the relevant deformations away from the Eisen CFT. And this Eisen CFT is a UV fixed point. And the continuous limit is strictly defined by pushing the lattice spacing to zero. And we keep the spin-spin operator and the energy-energy operator correlator to be well normalized. Here, epsilon operator is bilinear of sigma, and it's the energy density operator, while the perturbation of this tau is the temperature perturbation, which equals to m over 2 pi and is proportional to 1 minus t over tc. When tau is greater than 0, we are actually in the lower than the Curie temperature. And also, the sigma x is the spin density operator, which coming from the lattice spin sigma. And the small h is the external magnetic field, which is proportional to capital H on the lattice. From abstract CFT point of view, Eisen CFT is defined as a conformal field theory with C2 symmetry, while there's only in which there was only exist 2 local relevant scalar operator, and the Z2 even one is the energy operator, and Z2 odd one is the spin operator. The conformal dimensions of the energy operator and spin operator would determine the critical scaling loss near the critical point. In 2 dimension, due to the existence of infinite dimensional Virasoro algebra, there exists a set of solvable diagonal conformal field series. They are called minimal models, which are labeled by 2 co-prime integrals P and Q, among which the minimal model 3, 4 describes 2-dimensional Eisen CFT with all possible spectrum and the central charge and interactions completely solvable. By using the knowledge about minimum model 3.4, we find that this Ising CFT is with central charge 1/2, and the conformal deformations of the left and right of energy operator is 1/2, 1/2, and of spin operator is 1/16, 1/16. And by dimensional counting, the mass dimension of the coupling M, which is the temperature perturbation, is 1. And the mass dimension of coupling H, which is external magnetic field perturbation, is 15/8. Those are all computations, exact computations from two-dimensional CFT. And then we can combine H and M together to make the dimensionless combinations. And those dimensionless combinations, including this psi, which is H over M to the power 15/8, and eta, it's M over H to the power 8/15, are called scaling parameters. And these dimensionless parameters are actually the labels of the algebra flow. And these two scaling parameters are related by simple power laws. Well, maybe in different spaces, they are up to some size. And we assume that we can try to extend them both from the real domain to the complex domain. And later, I will talk about that later. Also, with no external magnetic field, the action of Ising field theory is equivalent to the action of two-dimensional Majorana fermions. We can write the action of the two-dimensional Majorana fermion in this form, and we see that this psi bar times psi is actually exactly the this combination actually is the energy operator. And now we see that why we have to introduce M for the temperature perturbation, because this M right now is the mass of the fermion. However, although the action is equivalent, the Hilbert space is quite different. In the Ising field theory language, we insist that the energy operator and spin operators are local operators. And the requirement that the spin operator is a local operator would do a projection to the Hilbert space of free fermions, and from the NS-NS sector and RR sector to the Hilbert space of Ising field series. And so that, and in this case, psi and psi bar operators are now not really a similar, not really a local operator. They are actually mutually semi-local with respect to the spin operator sigma. Okay, from Ising conformal field theory and to generic Ising field series, there exist two directions of algebra flows, labeling by, there exist two coordinates, M and H. And in the space of Ising field series, we can define the so-called state functions, which are functions depending only on M and H. For example, we have the free energy density, which is F, which depends on M and H, and the first mass gap, which we call it M1, and it's also equivalent to the inverse of correlation length. And also the poles and the residues of scattering matrices are also functions depending on M and H. Many of them are available using numerical method. And in our project, we are using a method called truncated free fermion space approach. This would provide a numerical approximation for the finite size spectrum of Ising field series on an infinite cylinder. And here, the horizontal axis is the size of cylinder, and the vertical axis is the energy levels. And from this finite size spectrum, the free energy density can be read out by the asymptotic slopes of the each energy levels. And the mass, the mass of particles, for example, like M1, can be acknowledged as the mass asymptotic gaps of the each energy levels. Of course, many of the state functions are dimensionful, so we can make them dimensionless and by measured by the in the unit of M or in the unit of H. And these dimensionless functions, which would only depend on the scaling parameters, and those functions are called scaling functions, which would describe the one single algebra flow or all Ising field series on this algebra flow labeled by psi or eta. For example,
look like they cross, they don't cross, right? Because so many.
Oh, so are you asking about this cross?
Yeah.
It's really, it's indeed cross. And this cross is actually related to some very interesting phenomena. Yes, if we have time, we can discuss this later. But generally speaking, this sometimes this cross have very fine structure shows like integrability breaking or some similar phenomena.
So what's on the axis?
Sorry?
What's on the axis there?
The horizontal axis is the size of the cylinder, and the vertical. Sorry?
Which units?
Sorry?
Which units?
In this plot, I'm in the unit of h to the power, to the power 8 over 15, yes. And the vertical axis is energy in the unit also in h to the power 8 over 15, yes.
This is at the integral point.
Yes, exactly, because you have exact cross here. There's no extension or repulsion at this cross, so this is actually a this is actually an evidence of preserving integrability. Yes, but this is an example. In more cases, we are dealing with non-integrable cases where you can have many different for these crosses. It can behave very differently. Yeah. Are there any further questions? Okay. Regarding the scaling functions, we can define the scaling functions with respect to the free energy, and the scaling functions regarding the mass M1. And in most part of my talk, I will focus on this function M1 hat of Xi, which is reflecting the properties of the first excited state mass. Next, let me try to introduce something about the different phases and different scenarios of Ising field series. And first, let's focus on t greater than tc, the disordered phase. At t greater than tc, or equivalent to m smaller than zero, it's in the disordered phase with unbroken Z2 symmetry. The Z2 symmetry is acted by flipping h to minus h. And the scaling functions, as we defined, are now even function in Xi, or depend only on Xi square. From Lesch's model, Yang and Li, 6 years ago, established the famous Yang-Li theorem, stating that the lattice partition function, which is Z, has zeros distributed in the complex domain of H, or on the complex domain of the parameter fugacity, which is defined by mu equals to e to the exponential minus 2 beta H. And H is the lattice external magnetic field. The zeros of Ising partition functions are distributed on a circle, and furthermore, in the disordered phase, the circle actually becomes an arc with an opening here, and the zeros of the Ising partition functions are distributed only in this segment. In the continuous limit, with the squeezing of lattice spacing and with the increasing of lattice size, there are more and more zeros for the partition functions. And these more and more zeros are sitting on this arc, and they will finally condense into a branch cut, actually two set of branch cut, into the branch cut of the free energy, which is defined by logarithm of Z. And this branch cut are known as the Yang-Li branch cut, and the edge of the Yang-Li arc becomes the edge of the branch cut, which is also called now as Yang-Li edge singularity, Yang-Li branching point, Yang-Li critical point. Well, it's become the so-called Yang-Li edge singularities. And the properties of the Yang-Li branch cut and the Yang-Li singularity is the key for understanding the high temperature disordered phase, and we will discuss that later. Now let's take a look at the low temperature phase, which is T smaller than Tc, and the system is sitting in the so-called ordered phase. In this ordered phase, the system is with the broken Z2 symmetry, and the spin operator has a non-zero vacuum expectation value, which is of plus or minus sigma bar, and with this sigma bar can be written as S bar times m to the power 1 over 8, and S is a constant coming from the lattice computation. So that if there's no external magnetic field, the system, the Ising field theory in low temperature phase would have a double degenerate vacuum at no external magnetic field. And such degeneracy would broken once you apply a non-vanishing external magnetic field. If you broke the symmetry with the small h, very small external magnetic field, then they will split into the stable vacuum with the spins aligned along the direction of external magnetic field, and the metastable vacuum with all the spins reversed to the external magnetic field direction. That's the picture in two dimensions. Also, in 1+1 dimension, we can regard Ising field theory has a field theory which describes the continuous limit of one-dimensional spin chains. And from the picture in one plus one dimensional, people know that from this one dimensional like Ising spin chain, people know that it would reproduce the spectrum of Ising model in 1+1 dimension would be of the Manson spectrum, which is called the McCoy-Wu scenario. And in previous description, we recognize the so-called fermions. And fermions can be understood as the domain walls between the upspins clusters and downspin clusters. And a small external magnetic field would provide the energy differences between the downspin clusters and upspin clusters. And such energy differences would be recognized similar to a string tension. With string tension equals with like a string, and the tension of the string is exactly F equals to sigma bar H. So that it's more or less like a model in 1+1 dimension with confining interactions. And with confining interactions, the spectrum can be solved by many methods, from non-relativistic confining interactions to semi-classical quantization, or furthermore, Bessel separator equation. And the spectrum is of Manson spectrum with a tower of stable particles. Also, let's go back to the two-dimensional case and regarding the Young-Li theorem. In the ordered phase, the Young-Li theorem gives that the zeros of partition function would sit on a full unit circle of the fugacity plane. And as you go to the continuous limit, of course, the zeros on the circle would condense and becoming as if a wall or a natural bound of analyticity separating this phase and this phase, and this phase corresponding to the one in the circle, and this phase corresponding to the one outside of the circle. And there are differences, they are different by the choice of the vacuum. And then we find that this is the natural bound of analyticity separating two phases. However, if we insist some scaling function or state functions on the right half plane, we can try to do analytic continuations, try to do it to the full complex Kasai plane, and people would find that there would exist a branch cut along the real negative axis, and this branch cut is called the Fischer-Langevin branch cut. Is there any question for now? Actually, this...
Mu
is the exponential of minus 2 beta h. This is the fugacity of the lattice. Here, mu is exponential minus 2 beta h. Beta is 1 of kb times t. Kb is the Boltzmann constant. And h is the lattice external magnetic field. So this picture is what actually happens to the lattice model. And to the continuous limit, it becomes here.
It's H is purely imaginary plus.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. But however, from the lattice model, people do not really understand where is the exact location of the singularity. I will come to that later. And similarly, this this works for the continuous limit for the full circle, and it actually becomes more or less like a wall separating two different phases in the ordered phase. And the people conjecture that it's possible to extend the definition of some state functions on the right half plane to the full complex plane. And then you will find a branch cut on the real negative axis. And this branch cut is called Fischer-Langevin branch cut. And actually this, why should you find a branch cut? Well, because physical quantities on the branch cut have physical meanings, and later on I will show the physical meaning of this Fischer-Langevin branch cut. It's actually representing a decay from the metastable vacuum to the stable vacuum. Otherwise, you can give a naive assumption saying that there's no branch cut here, but then you'll find some problem. Yeah. And also, this is a conjecture because you cannot exclude the possibilities that there will be singularities here, singularities here, or singularities along the branch cut. Actually, a singularity along the branch cut is another possible conjecture, but it will be ruled out in the later part of my talk. And those conjectured singularities have very significant physical meaning. Okay, any further questions regarding this Fisher-Langevin branch cut? I will talk more about Fisher-Langevin branch cut later on. All right, then let's go to another interesting topic regarding two-dimensional Eisenfield theory in the space of two-dimensional Eisenfield theory. When Ksi or eta takes some very special values, the Eisenfield series would become integrable or solvable on the full RG trajectory or in some limit. And there are these special points that first, when you have vanishing external magnetic fields, it would correspond to the solution, unsaturated solution of free fermions. And the free energy from lattice is completely solvable by this m squared times log m squared, the form of m squared times log of m squared. And this log of m squared is actually measured in the unit of the lattice coupling. To another extreme case, with m equals zero, which means you are fixing at the critical temperature, the Curie temperature, and with non-vanishing external magnetic field, then you find that this Eisenfield series becomes a set of integrable field series, which are called the E8 field series, consists of 8 stable massive particles. And the mass ratios between these 8 stable particles are corresponding to the to one of special cations of the E8 algebra. So it's also this theory is called E8 field theory. And also this E8 field theory as an integrable massive integrable two-dimensional quantum field theory can be constructed using the E8 Dynkin diagram. And this construction method is called the affine total field theory. Another integrable cases happens where m is smaller than zero, which means you are in the high temperature phase, and take h to be a pure imaginary, and you will find that there exists an infrared fixed point, which is the Young-Li critical point, located at ksi equals to plus or minus I times ksi naught. And the value of ksi naught is given by this number. And near the Young-Li critical point, the Eisenfield series are called infrared integrable, which means that if you suppress all irrelevant contribution and consider only the Young-Li CFT, which describes the Young-Li critical model, or deforming the Young-Li CFT with its only relevant operator, this massive deformation of Young-Li CFT, which is called scaling Young-Li model, is a massive integrable quantum field theory described by exact elastic scattering matrices. And the Young-Li CFT itself is described by the non-unitary mean model 2,5 with the central charge minus 22 over 5. And the only relevant operator, phi, is with scaling dimension 1/5 and 1/5. It's the only primary operator of Young-Li CFT. And the coupling lambda is of mass dimension 12 over 5. And I will need these numbers later on in my analysis of the Young-Li critical point. Now, let's take a step back and talk about the big picture of this whole project. The goal of this whole project is to try to understand the space of Eisenfield series from a non-perturbative point of view. Near the critical points or integrable points, we are able to use various perturbation series, like conformal perturbation series, form factor perturbation series, and it's possible to compute some exact results. However, when away from these integrable points or critical points, there are some other constraints from different symmetries or different scenarios which could give us some more information. But it serves much weaker than integrability or conformal symmetry. And also, in the space of Eisenfield theory, the analyticity structure of scaling functions could tell us very important information about the structure of the space of series. Is there any question right now?
One last part.
Yes. Those are non-critical fixed points, which means your mass just goes to infinity. And this is the that is the Young Ising fixed point, which is expanded by these two directions of energy flow, sigma and epsilon, and flow to Young liquid point. And this P prime and P actually means that your mass scale is just goes to infinity. So I actually looking at some infinite point, which is an empty theory. Yeah. Any further questions?
Yeah, ferromagnetical. So what is point ferromagnetical?
I'm only considering ferromagnetic easing. So, but well, this point actually means that you are actually looking into some endpoint of the Young-Li branch card with at infinity, which actually means you have a actually complex empty theory. Well, we can talk about that later on, but it's this P and P prime are points representing empty theory. Just the mass scale goes to infinity. That's it. Any further questions? Okay. All right. Then let me talk about the analyticity properties of the scaling functions. And first, I will focus on what in the high temperature phase, the disordered phase. In high temperature, a very nice assumption is that it's called the high temperature standard analyticity conjecture, stating that some of the universal scaling functions, like the scaling function of free energy or scaling function of the mass M1, are analytical anywhere on the complex Kasai square plane, except on the Young-Li branch card and the Young-Li branching point located at somewhere. And based on this analyticity conjecture, one can state the so-called high temperature dispersion relation, representing the scaling functions in the complex plane by integration over the Young-Li branch card. And this imaginary part of M1 is actually the discontinuity of the scaling function on the branch card. This is right now served as a conjecture and is a very natural conjecture from the Young-Li arc picture on lattice. A very special thing about why we can push the external magnetic field to imaginary is that at pure imaginary Kasai or pure imaginary external magnetic field, the theory, although it's not unitary, exists some reality properties due to the property called pseudo hermeticity. So there exists some operator S, which is an inversion, and it can flip the Hamiltonian to its complex conjugation, and this action S is actually more or less like flipping the psi of spin operator, so that it is possible for Ising field theory sitting in a pure imaginary magnetic field to find a positive definite Hilbert space, well, a Hilbert space with positive definite inner product, so that it's possible to construct the spectrum, and the spectrum is well bounded from below. So with this nice property, the spectrum is bounded, and there are two possible cases for the bounded spectrum. One is that you can have a unique ground state for an Ising field theory with pure imaginary magnetic field. Or you can have two ground states, 0+ and 0-, with complex conjugate free energy. Like one is free energy, some real part, plus some I imaginary part, or one another with the real part minus I, the imaginary part. And this similar property also works for M1. Then we know what's the nature of this Young-Li branch card standing here, extend to all infinity. This Young-Li branch card is actually a line of first order phase transition between two phases with complex state functions. And the mean field description of this line of first order phase transition is described by the phi to the cube theory with complex coupling. And the endpoint of this first line phase transition is it's a critical point representing continuous phase transition. And it's represented by the Young-Li CFT. And this Young-Li singularity is indeed a critical point. And the infrared property of the critical point is defined, controlled by Young-Li CFT. When Kasai square equals to minus Kasai square, this Young-Li CFT is an infrared fixed point. It would control the critical behavior. And when Kasai square is near this critical point. And we can try to use effective action to describe the theory. With the action, the first term, A star, is the action, the formal action of the Young-Li CFAT, the minimum model 2,5. The second term is the relevant deformation of Young-Li CFT, and it would control the leading critical behavior. And those operator OI are irrelevant operator, which would give you some information about the subleading critical behaviors. And of course, phi is the only relevant operator sitting at a non-trivial scalar primary of the Hilbert space of the Young-Li CFT. And operator OIs are irrelevant operators, and those irrelevant operators are also sitting in the space, in the Hilbert space of Young-Li CFTs. And those irrelevant operators are actually descendants in the space, in the Hilbert space of Young-Li CFT. The effective couplings are regular near minus cosine naught square, and the constant cosine naught square is the location of Young-Li critical point, which can be measured numerically. Using dimensional analysis, the single expansion of scaling functions near minus cosine naught square, the leading singular behavior, is determined by the mass dimension of the relevant coupling lambda. Because lambda got a mass dimension 12 over 5, so since M1, which is the scaling function of mass is with mass dimension 1, so it should be proportional to cosine square plus cosine naught square to the power 5 over 12. This is how the leading critical behavior controlled by the relevant perturbation. And the beyond the leading ones, irrelevant operators, OI, would determine the subleading terms of the single expansion of the scaling functions. Assuming that the OI got the mass dimension delta I, it will its contribution to the singular expansion other than the leading term is with power 5 over 12 times delta I minus 2, because this coupling GI times M1 to the power delta I over minus 12 is dimensionless. And you can have only dimensionless combinations in this series expansions other than this leading singular term. Are there any questions right now? Okay. And for example, for people familiar with the few with two-dimensional CFT, people know that this TT bar operator is an irrelevant operator as the second descendant of identity operator with mass dimension 4. So that this TT bar operator as an irrelevant operator will contribute to the term proportional to 5 over to the power 5 over 6 of the single expansion of M1. And actually this coupling, this effective coupling C naught, will tell you some information about what is the infrared behavior of this TT bar perturbation with respect to this Young-Li critical point. Okay, the singular behavior of scaling function can be used to measure the location of Young-Li critical point. As I have discussed before, we can numerically measure some data regarding the scaling functions. And with this ratio R1 defined in this way by dividing the singular prefactor with some test value of cosine naught square, we can use the regular behavior of R1 to test the location of the Young-Li critical point, measure the value of cosine naught square. And here in this plot, I'm plotting the vertical axis, it's the function R1, and the vertical axis is cosine square. And here I'm taking different test value of cosine naught square. And we find that since the green bullets are approaching a regular value at this point, we are recognize that these green bullets are representing the correct value of cosine naught square, the correct value of the location of Young-Li critical point. Also, this is done for math, the scaling function of mass. Also, people can do it using very different numerical method from lattice models, from lattice corner transform matrices, and measure the singular behavior of free energy. And they obtain, some people, Bazanov and his collaborators, obtain very similar values comparing to us. Also, other than the location of Young-Li critical point, the critical amplitudes of the singular expansion of the scaling functions can be measured numerically. And these values of critical amplitude are reflecting the information about the effective couplings near the Young-Li critical point. Any questions for now? Okay. Now we have some information, some idea about how these scaling functions, the scaling function M1 hat, behaves near the Young-Li critical point.
Just to make sure that the numbers that show are not universal numbers.
Sorry?
Universal numbers, I mean quantities that are determined by CFT. It's just a part fact of the latent
code. Oh, so I'm asking why the lattice computation gives the same result as my computation with the field theory, right? I'm certain that Bazanov and his collaborators are using lattice computation and mimic the flow from lattice easing model first to the icing, to the continuous icing field series, and then mimic this flow from icing conformal field theory to Young-Li conformal field theory. And as if my memory serves, they use some very special tricks about subtracting the subleading contributions regarding this flow from lattice model to the conformal field, to the easing field theory. And I'm sure that they want to reproduce the same results with these effective couplings at the infrared comparing to us. So we can discuss this in details after the talk. And it's regarding some details when they use when computing the to reproducing this flow from lattice point of view. Okay. Any further questions? All right. Now we have some idea about how the system behaves, how the scaling function behaves near the Young-Li critical point. And also, people know that near Ksi square equals to minus infinity, which means you are actually at the point where you're sitting at the critical temperature with non-vanishing external magnetic field, and it's controlled by the solvable model E8 field theory. And so that at Ksi square equals to infinity, people would find the regular expansion of the scaling functions in powers of m, or in powers of eta, since the operator epsilon, the energy operator, is a relevant operator for icing CFT. So that people have the expansion here with a single expansion of scaling functions, and we have the regular expansion of scaling functions near infinity. And numerically, we can construct the numerical approximation of the discontinuities of the scaling functions along the Young-Li branch cut. And it's given by this red curve. And by using this discontinuity along the Young-Li branch cut, we can try to numerically check the correctness of the previous mentioned the dispersion relation, which represents the value of scaling functions by the integration over the Young-Li branch cut. And here, this purple dashed line, it's the result of numerical integration. And the purple bullets are the measurement from numerical method. And they show good accordance and show that, okay, indeed, it looks as if for scaling function M1, the high temperature standard analytic conjecture stating that only exists the Young-Li singularity and Young-Li branch cut is correct. Okay, this is the analytic properties of scaling function in high temperature phase. Are there any questions? Okay. If not, let's switch to the low temperature phase. As I have discussed, in the low temperature phase, in the ordered phase with broken Z2 symmetry, scaling functions are where you choose Ksi to be real positive values. That means you are choosing the real positive H. You are actually choosing a vacuum. And the scaling functions should be a real continuous function along the real positive axis. And the analytic conjectures in low temperature stating that for the scaling function of M1 hat and G of Ksi, for these two scaling functions, it's possible to do analytical continuation with respect to these scaling functions to the full complex plane, and you will find a branch cut associated to the origin all the way to the infinity. And this branch cut is the so-called Fischer Langevin branch cut, which there's no other singularities here, or on the Fischer Langevin branch cut. You have a question, please.
Branch cut, is it near the origin?
Sorry?
Near the origin, how does the branch cut look like?
I will show that. It's actually, for M1, it's a singular power law plus an essential singularity, and I will show why there exists an essential singularity later on. and this essential singularity have a very significant physical meaning. Okay. It's not only a power law for this Fisher-Langevin branch cut. Okay, with this assumption of analysis with the existence of Fisher-Langevin branch cut, we can similarly formulate the low temperature dispersion relation with integration along the Fisher-Langevin branch cut, and the integration is on the discontinuity of scaling function along it. However, at Ksi goes to zero minus this very special point, there exists some non-analytical contributions for the scaling functions. And this very special non-analytic contributions are actually would lead an essential singularity of the scaling functions right at this point. Other than the
integral expression is still okay, right?
Sorry?
The integral expression is still okay.
I will show the expression later. It's coming, yes. It's coming. Yeah, because it's coming. But let me first analyze the analytic contributions. For example, for M1, the analytic contributions near the origin, the free form endpoint, and the infinity, the E8 point, they are expandable in series of Xi to the power 2/3 or series in the powers of eta. And these two expansions control the behaviors, the analytical behaviors here and here. However, at small positive Ksi, at here, the physical meaning of choosing small positive Ksi is that you have a double degenerate vacuum, you lift it degeneracy and choose the stable vacuum. Then you do an analytic continuation of the vacuum from here to the upper edge or the lower edge of the Fisher-Langevin branch cut. Then you are actually exchange the role of stable vacuum and the metastable vacuum, just as if you are instantly you are flipping H from plus to minus. So a system sitting at the upper edge or lower edge here or here are actually corresponding to an Eastern field theory sitting in the metastable vacuum. And the tunneling effect between the metastable vacuum and the stable vacuum would contribute to the scaling functions and lead to the non-analytic term I've mentioned and cause this point as an essential singularity. Okay, at finite temperature, the metastable vacuum are not only all of the spins reversed to the external magnetic field. At finite temperature in the metastable vacuum, thermal fluctuations would generate many bubbles in the metastable vacuum, and those bubbles are bubbles with stable vacuum inside. And some big bubbles would cause the system to condensate and lead to a complete vacuum decay from the metastable vacuum to the stable vacuum. And with this kind of configuration of stable vacuum bubbles in the metastable vacuum, it's possible to use some knowledge about some computation with respect to the state sum in the metastable vacuum to compute the contribution to the scaling functions, to the scaling function of free energy, and to the state function of the state function of M1. And for free energy, it's of this form with lambda over 4 pi to the exponential minus pi over lambda. And lambda is proportional to minus Ksi, which is a greater, very small number, greater, very small positive number. And this exponential to the minus pi over lambda term is the cause of essential singularity. And the expression for free energy was discovered many years ago, and this expression for M1, we discovered this recently. Yes, please.
What do you call analytic terms? Is it the power series?
The analytic terms come from the continuation of M1 hat, and do analytic continuation from Ksi
it's
to minus Ksi. Yes, it's power series. Also,
is it the divergent power series?
It's a convergent power series with finite radius of convergence.
So it converges near the origin.
Yes, exactly. And also, it's actually very, very misleading here because I'm writing it in the powers of Ksi to the power 2/3, but actually there are some terms, not of the, some terms like Ksi to the power 3 or Ksi to the power 11 over 3 in this infinite series. And this series can be computed by using the Bessel separator equation regarding the Easy Mansons.
You're saying it's convergent. So it's anti convergent and then.
It's convergent series. It's possible to prove it's convergent. Yes.
Because that's sort of exponential.
Yes.
Will suggest asymptotic series.
Yes. There's another description using the semi-classical quantization, and the solution of Bessel separator equation would give some correction to the expression. And from this expression, it's readable that this would produce some finite radius of convergence. And actually, yeah, there are some, well, if you're asking about the radius of convergence, there are some other arguments regarding another picture. I will mention that later. Are there any further questions? Okay, let's continue. This non-analytic term actually corresponding to the decay for free energy. This non-analytic term actually represents the turning effect from the metasurveil vacuum to the stable vacuum and controls the behaviors right here. However, people would okay, we have the formulation of the low temperature analytic conjecture of the scaling functions, and it's possible to numerically, we have the control of the analytic contributions and the non-analytic contributions. So it's possible to verify the low temperature dispersion relation numerically. And here is a verification for the state function, for the scaling function M1 hat, not only for M1 hat, but also for M2 hat, M3 hat, scaling function for the mass M2 and M3. The bullets are the data, numerical data, measured from the finite size spectrum. And the solid curves, which match quite well with the bullets, are dispersion integrals from approximating the discontinuities along the Fischer-Langevin spread cut. However, in the ordered phase, there's a very interesting question regarding the existence, the property of the so-called seminodal point. We know that at xi goes to 0 minus, the system is determined by the metastable vacuum to vacuum transition process. And this transition from metastable vacuum to a stable vacuum is controlled by the tunneling effect, which happens only quantumly. And at xi goes to minus infinity, which is an analytic continuation of the E8 field theory. And for E8 field theory, people know that there exists only one vacuum, one stable vacuum. So there's only one true vacuum, and the phase transition should happen classically. So along the Fischer-Langevin spread cut, if we change the picture from the metastable and stable vacuum, and the phase transition happens quantumly via the tunneling effect, to the picture of only one stable vacuum. Along the Fischer-Langevin spread cut, it looks as if there exists a point where the metastable vacuum would indeed become unstable vacuum. And this point is called spinodal singularity. And near this spinodal singularity, people find it's possible to find the singular behaviors of the scaling functions near the spinodal point. However, in our analysis regarding this low temperature dispersion relation, regarding the picture here, it looks as if our conjecture of low temperature analyticity conjecture do stating that there exists no spinodal singularity. And since in our conjecture and numerical verification, there exists no spinodal singularity, a natural question to ask is, what has happened and where is the spinodal singularity? And this question will be given later when we talk about extended analyticity conjecture. Any questions for now? Okay, let's continue. For now, I have considered the analyticity properties of scaling functions on the complex psi plane for high T phase and low T phase separately. How about what is happening on the complex eta plane? Let's try to first map the complex psi plane of the high temperature to the low temperature to the complex eta plane. The high temperature phase is mapped to this wedge on the complex eta plane, with arg of minus eta between plus 4 pi over 15 and minus 4 pi over 15, and is given by the relation between eta and xi. So the high temperature complex domain is mapped to here. And the low temperature complex domain of Xi, similarly, is mapped to the wedge here with arg of eta between plus 8 pi over 15 and minus 8 pi over 15. So our previous complex eta plane of high temperature and low temperature are embedded to here and here. And in between, there's two segments of angle pi over 5 are not corresponding to the high temperature phase or low temperature phase. And this domain, we are called shadow domain, which is actually behind the Fisher-Langevin branch cut. And Fisher-Langevin branch cut are actually extending along this ray and along this ray. And the shadow domain is behind the Fisher-Langevin branch cut and do not have a good physical corresponding to any physical system. Also, the Young-Li branching point is located at here and here along this ray. And with this value, the location of Young-Li branch cut can be computed from the previous value of sine node square. Of course, since Young-Li branch cut is a branch cut, and what is only important is the location of the branching point, it's possible to rotate the Young-Li branch cut for 180 degrees and make it extend from the Young-Li branch point to the infinity. And the infinity of complex eta plane now represents the Xi equals zero. And with this picture, it looks as if we have from the high temperature analytic conjecture, we know that in high temperature domain, on what is only important, it's the Young-Li singularity and the Young-Li branch cut. And from what we know about the low temperature analytic conjecture, the scaling functions are analytic in this wedge. And the only branch cut would be the Fisher-Langevin branch cut along here and here. And and there's no other singularities here. Now, since we are already on the complex eta plane, a natural question to ask is there any singularity exist within this shadow domain, within this wedge, which cannot be mapped to any physical system?
This picture is the analytic continuation of the disordered phase.
Not analytic continuation, but we're embedding the complex Xi plane to this wedge and this wedge. So we are just a change of coordinate.
No, I understand, but you should see inside.
So you mean about you are asking about the rotating of the branch cut?
Yes.
Okay, the rotating of the branch cut is yes, by changing shit. Yes.
So for real eta, we are on the physical values.
Yes, for real eta, we are in the physical values of real h and the positive or negative m. Yes.
Yes. So which phase is this on the real axis?
This one corresponding to a low temperature phase, and which is the real positive eta axis.
Yes.
It's the low energy, low temperature phase, or ordered phase.
But there are two of them.
Sorry?
There are two of them, right? Spin up or spin down.
We choose only the spin aligned together along the direction of h.
I don't see where you make this choice. On the left hand side of the plane, you are in the disordered phase, right? On the left, on the negative real axis, you're on the disordered phase.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
And you're not hitting anything singular at the origin here.
Yes, we are not expecting anything singular here.
So what you're seeing must be what's drawn here must be the metastable continuation of the disordered phase, not the ordered phases.
So are you asking where are the metastable phases?
I'm saying what's drawn here on the right hand side.
Yes.
Must be a metastable phase. It cannot be the ordered phases.
What on the right hand side are the stable phases? Actually?
No. If you're on the left hand side, you had the disordered phase.
Yes.
I don't see how the right side of the
phase. How it comes to here, right?
Yes.
It's actually eta equals zero. It's represented by the another E8 quantum field theory with temperature equals zero, temperature equals the Curie temperature, and you have an infinite strong external magnetic field. So the description of the scaling function near this point is well defined. It is only to the left and to the right only only differ by the sign of perturbing the E8 field theory with energy operator. So it behaves regularly. It behaves regularly,
Okay, let's discuss it later.
We can discuss this later. And even at this point, some quantities can be computed in close exact form. So there's no singularity near the origin.
But what's the expectation value of sigma on this picture?
Sorry?
What's the expectation value of sigma on this picture?
At here, yes. Expectation value of sigma is plus sigma bar.
Side?
It's zero.
But then it jumps?
It looks as if the wave of the sigma indeed jumps, but we are only considering the scaling functions, M, or this phi tutor. So we are only considering the analytic properties of this function.
M of what? On the particles that you can find on the high energy high temperature and low temperature are different.
Yes, the interpretation of particle is different. Yes, indeed, it's different.
Okay, go on.
It's different. They have different interpretations in the high temperature phase and low temperature phase. But the mass at here, it's continuous. It's exactly described by this field theory here. So it's continuous.
The field theory, you said, is the E8 theory has no mass.
E8 theory is a massive theory. Yes.
Okay, go on.
Yes. So this is the how this is how the scaling function should looks like on a complex eta plane, and however, people do not know what is happening in the shadow domain here and here, so we can make some conjecture about the analytic properties of scaling functions in the shadow domain. The easiest assumption is the so-called extended analytic conjecture, stating that the scaling function it's analytical anywhere on the complex eta plane, and there's no singularity in the shadow domain, and the only non-trivial structure is the Young-Lee branching point and the Young-Lee branch cut attached to it. There's no actual singularities within the shadow domain or along the rotated Young-Lee branch cut. And the Young-Lee point is the nearest singularity under the Fisher-Langevin branch cut. This extended analytic conjecture, it's the most elegant conjecture, and if it is not correct, if there indeed exists any singularity in the shadow domain, then one must seriously consider the interpretation of this singularity, which is behind the Fisher-Langevin branch cut and beyond the on the surface of this rotated Young-Lee branch cut. So from the extended analytic conjecture, we can formulate the corresponding dispersion relation representing the scaling function M1 is a function of eta, and by the dispersion integral on the rotated Young-Lee branch cut. And with this complex discontinuity delta 1, and delta 1 is defined by the differences between the value here and the value here. And since we can numerically approximate delta along the rotated Young-Lee branch cut, and then we can formulate a numerical approximation of the discontinuity like this with the real part and the imaginary part. So this was this point corresponding to eta goes to infinity, and this point is the Young-Lee point. And with this numerical approximation of discontinuity, it's possible to do the dispersion integration and compare the result of dispersion integration to the data of scaling function measured from numerical method. And here, well, those are actually bullets. Those blue bullets are numerical data measured from the finite size spectrum of the scaling function M1. And the red curve is from the dispersion integral with respect to the discontinuity I have shown before.
Sorry, all these numerics that you have been showing,
yes,
you compute from this truncated first fermion.
Truncated free fermion space approach, yes.
When you go to complex levels of parameters, but you follow them from real values to know what you are talking about, I guess, right?
Yes.
So you start with real values, and there you have M1 is the lowest line mass, and then you follow it to whatever you want to go.
Yes.
And you continuously follow it, you measure slightly above and slightly below this complex cut.
Yes.
That's how you extract that
square. Yes, yes, exactly. And also, because for the pure imaginary external magnetic field, we can only, for the pure imaginary magnetic field, it's also possible to obtain the spectrum and the finite spectrum, but the spectrum is complex. It's also possible to measure some complex values, for example, like for the mass or both edges of the Young-Li branch cut, but the measurement is quite complicated. So we use the analytical continuation rather than direct measurement. We can discuss the details later. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'd like to understand this point. So we make a guess for the dispersion relation and then fit it at physical values to get the discontinuity, or do we go really to the place where the discontinuity is and we measure the discontinuity?
We are not really measure any value here. It's difficult to measure value here. And it's not possible to measure value in the shadow domain. So we are actually obtain the numerical approximation of the discontinuity from the expression of scaling functions near the Young-Li point and the expression of the scaling functions at infinity. Yes, so it's also more or less like a conjecture. Yes. And this is a verification, numerical verification of extended dispersion relation with respect to M1 and
the
also
previous one, this high and low temperature ones, those you could measure directly, right?
Some of them can measure numerically, yes. Like in this plot, there are some very sparse bullets here are coming from the measurement. So if you take your Ksi value to be at here, you're actually looking at a spectrum, a complex spectrum. And for example, the free energy that you'll find that the spectrum looks like this. The real part of E, and this is the cylinder. And you find that it behaves like this. The real part behaves like this. And the imaginary part behaves like this. So you'll find that the slope corresponding to the imaginary part of free energy, and this one corresponding to the real part of free energy. Yes. But this kind of measurement is difficult due to the limitation of numerical method. So it's not reliable. So we choose to do analytic continuation to numerically approximate the discontinuity. So this is the verification of extended dispersion relation along the real values of eta and similar numerical and this dispersion integral of the extended dispersion integral of M1 should also work in the complex domain of eta. And here this is a comparison of dispersion integrals with together with the expansions at eta equals 0. And eta equals to the point where the Young-Li branching point. So this plot is along the interval from eta equals 0 and eta at the Young-Li point. Bullets in orange and blue are the dispersion integration result. And the red curve and the green curve and the dashed curves in the above are expansions at eta equals 0, the E8 point, and at the Young-Li point. So it also shows a good match. Now, since we have verified the extended analyticity conjecture of the lowest mass M1, it's possible to back to the question regarding spin nodal singularity. The low temperature analyticity conjecture already tells us that it looks as if from low temperature case, there exists no spin nodal singularity. And the spin nodal singularity should hide inside the Young-Li, inside the Fischer-Langevin branch cut. And then furthermore, by there exists no other singularity within the shadow domain. And the Young-Li branching point is the closest singularity behind the Fischer-Langevin branch cut. It's possible to state that the Young-Li singularity is indeed the true non-perturbative spin nodal singularity. And near this true spin nodal singularity, critical behaviors are controlled by Young-Li universality class. So this is the picture of two dimension. And it will be very interesting to see how this picture goes to higher dimension, especially in three dimension. I remember that in 4 minus epsilon dimension, it looks as if the spin nodal singularity is very close to the feature launch Brancard, so the singular scaling behaviors near which can be actually measured. But we don't know what is happening in, especially in any dimension between 2 and 4, and especially in 3 dimension. Okay, how many time do I have?
Zero.
Okay. It's okay. I'm not going to talk about this scattering because it's yes. There are some nice fancy pictures, but I can show these pictures later when any of you guys discuss with me. Yeah. Okay, let's come to the end. So what did I do in my this talk? I first introduced some basics of two-dimensional eigenfield series and talk about the phases, ordered phase and disordered phase, and show the analytic properties of scaling functions in these phases, and show that and also give the so-called extended analytic conjecture and show that it's correct. And the Young-Lie singularity for two dimension is indeed the true spin nodal singularity behind the Fischer-Langevin branch card. And our goal is to understand the structure of series space of two-dimensional Eigenfield series from a non-perturbative sense. And the difficulties is the limitation of both numerical methods and the perturbative calculations and the conceptual difficulties when considering the Eigenfield series in a completely non-solvable domain. And there are many unsolved questions, including the evolution of analyticity structure of scalar matrices in low temperature, in high temperature, and similarly in all temperature. And also, we are quite interested in how the UV behaviors of scattering would behave like, and inelastic scattering, and how the parity of poles can contribute to the structure of scattering when you change the parameters in the space of Eigenfield series. Okay, that's all of my talk. Thank you very much for listening. Okay, please.
Why is this picture in data plane scheme independent?
Is scheme independent?
Yes. Why wouldn't differ?
You mean the renormalization scheme?
Yes.
That's a very good question. And the question lies that we are defining eta as the dimensionless combination of the parameters of the perturbations.
What if the mass you use happens to be the mass I use plus h squared?
Plus h squared?
Yes. Just
so you are asking that if it's possible to above the scaling function I define, we add some.
I just think in the scheme you use, what you call m might differ from what I call m in my scheme by h squared.
By h squared?
Yes. So for example, that would change what you call eta. I mean, what you call eta would not be the same as what I call eta.
Oh, I see. So, but I think the scaling functions are strictly well defined at those special points, like at Eigenfield theory.
Actually, you show me a picture in the eta plane.
Yes.
And I'm trying to understand why the eta plane is, why the eta plane has a coordinate that you can talk about.
Oh, so are you asking about the coordinate?
Well, eta. Uh-huh. You define this coordinate eta, but it seems a scheme dependent notion, so I'm not sure what the physical what the content of these pictures.
The content of this picture, okay. We fix eta equals 0, this point, to be exactly the Eigenfield theory.
Yes. Suppose we do this thing. So we change the definition of m by h squared. I don't remember the
yes.
eta, but I think eta would change, right?
Yeah.
What in the previous picture? Right. So if I shift m by h squared, right? Eta would change by some amount.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not h squared, whatever, some power of h.
Some power of h, okay.
I don't know, I'm just saying usually what
oh, I see. So you are asking if it's possible to...
not scheme independent. Just another function of eta. So then define eta to a function of eta.
For example, eta equals to plus
maybe in the domain, so you can add an M or whatever. Or whatever you want, the same.
To a function of eta.
To a, okay.
An eta to a function of eta.
It seems to me that.
For example, like this.
Maybe, yes.
And then we see that eta goes to zero, it should return to the E8 theory. And we also require that eta goes to infinity, goes to the free fermion.
I'm sure you can still make that happen.
Then that
all the functions of eta that fix you at infinity.
Okay, I see.
So that would be my concern. It's very dangerous to talk about couplings in quantum field theory.
Yes, exactly.
Canonically defined things.
Yes. So.
So analytic functions.
So find some functions which fix the origin, fix infinity, and some maybe maybe the position of Young-Li critical point would change, right?
Yes. So, and you might add extra cards or remove cards or who knows.
Yes. Sorry, I have never considered this question before. Yes. But I think if strictly follow the definition and strictly follow the definition of scaling parameters here,
I mean,
and this M and H are defined
M and
at
H
mutual value. Sorry?
M and H. I mean, you mean?
Initially, they are defined at the UV filter.
In the CFT, they are not defined because in conform perturbation theory, you can redefine the couplings too. I mean, renormalization is always the thing, right? Couplings are never canonical. But it's not infinitesimal, there is a finite perturbation.
No, they are both infinitesimal, but the ratio is finite, right?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, but they're actually flowing, so they're not finite.
No, but eta is the ratio between two infinitesimal quantities, right?
It doesn't matter. They're infinitesimal, but they are parallel series. They can be redefined by parallel series in infinitesimals, in which case we'll change by a finite amount the ratio.
No.
Yes.
No. AX1 plus dot or the higher order divided by B epsilon 1 plus higher order.
You're gonna have an extremely hard time convincing me that the couplings are canonically defined.
If eta is defined as the ratio of two linearized perturbation around the CFT, I think that is well defined in the CFT.
I mean, what if in your you're gonna perturbation in some scheme, right? And in your scheme, I think
the sigma
is well defined at the CFT. Right. As soon as you move away from the CFT point, sigma is not well defined anymore.
That's fine, but I don't think we are moving away from. We always move infinitesimally close. We are always infinitesimally close to
the CFT. I think energy flow all the way to a gap, right? That's not infinitesimal.
But eta is defined as the infinitesimal as the direction where you leave the CFT point. It's not related to a finite, how far you go in the RG flow.
Yes.
Eta is related to.
This ratio controls sort of the direction of the vector.
The regressional flow, yes.
But then how you move in the space of couplings still depends on. I mean,
just along the flow.
It depends on the ratio, right? You shoot at a given ratio, and then you will go somewhere.
Just
the ratio. Everything is parametrized as a function of the ratio. It's not parametrized as a function of the finite coupling where you end or something like that. That I agree. You will not be able to do.
Then, wait, the ends of those branch points are supposed to be different x points, or what are they?
Sorry.
What are the ends of the branch points?
To infinity.
No, the other end.
Rotate after rotation, it's also to infinity.
But you see, if what you're saying was
correct, the two points at the end, those are CFT.
You're just pointing at how fast you're going with
this point. This point are Young-Li CFT.
Yeah, and then what's the other one?
Yeah,
this one is the same.
Okay.
Because it's upper plane, it's lower plane, it's only by conjugate conjugation.
Sorry?
So, like the origin is which?
This one?
Yeah.
This is the E8 field theory.
And then what the thing? So, you class.
Origin and infinity are different directions. They are not different magnitudes.
Yes.
No,
yes. This CFT and this CFT are the same. They are Young-Li CFT. The origin is not a CFT. It's an E8 field theory. Yes. It's a massive integrable theory. Yes. And for the question, I think this eta and cosine are labeled by the infinitesimally the small h and the ratio between the infinitesimally h and m, and give the direction at the initial point of the UV CFT, and you just starting here and just follow the flow. Yes.
Okay.
Are there any further questions?
I'm not that hard to find out.
Sorry?
Do you know anything about magnetic M2 for Rheolita?
M2 and beyond? That's a very good question, because for M2, the analyticity properties would be very different, and it's, and I will tell you that the thing I can tell you is right now is that you'd better not considering M2, but considering the bound state pole of M2 of S of theta. So consider the case of particle 1, 1, 1, 1, scattering and exchange the by along the channel of exchanging particle 2, and this location of the channel would be this exchange channel would give you some pole of the scattering matrices. And this location of the pole follows some rules, follows some dispersion relations, and it will tell you some more interesting information about the AC field theory. For example, what I can tell you right now is that in the high temperature case, T is greater than TC, and we are actually changing from cosine square to from plus infinity to cosine square equals to zero to cosine square equals to minus cosine naught square. Then, on the complex plane of this is the plus I pi minus I pi, this is the structure of S of theta. What I can tell you is that the pole, let's call it alpha 2, would first go down, and then at the middle line of this minus pi over 2, it will go out all the way to infinity. This is an ongoing work, and there's also another set of poles coming from the another sheet, coming down up and depart to infinity. And the location of this point, this number of psi 2 square can be measured. And how when it's crossed the origin can also be measured. So I would say that for higher masses and higher excitations, you'd better consider the pole it related to of the S matrices and how it moves in the complex domain of theta. Okay. We can talk more after the similar talk. Thank you. Okay. If there's no question, thank you very much. Thank you all very much.